Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Alex Brown, co-founder of The Beard Club, which is formerly known as The Dollar Beard Club, a $10 million subscription business that sends its members a monthly supply of all the best products to keep your beard looking healthy and feeling fresh. Alex is a serial entrepreneur who got his very first business off the ground at the age of 9, selling apples and pears from his parents' backyard on the side of the road in front of his house. Growing up, Alex went on to do construction work with his dad's business, take on consulting gigs, work with a startup accelerator in Canada, and began launching his own businesses along the way. In 2014, after moving to Southern California, Alex made friends and started working with Chris Stoikos, who'd become his co-founder at Beard Club. And once the two started working on the idea for the Beard Club as a side project out of frustration around expensive beard products on the market, things began taking off very quickly. They built a pre-launch list by running Facebook ads to a landing page that described their offering, a monthly subscription for beard care products. And once they felt they had enough validation, they used their skills at video production and marketing to film a launch video that quickly went viral. Now, since launching, the Beard Club's generated more than $10 million in revenue in the past 3 years, having shipped over 2 million boxes, all with now 210 million views on their videos across Facebook and YouTube. In this episode, Alex and I talk about how he parlayed his skills at creating and executing on creative, edgy, and high production videos into a dependable source of new customers every time they dropped a new video. We cover the step-by-step validation process Alex and his co-founder used to get the Beard Club off the ground and to their first 100 paying customers within just days of launching the business. We dig into the back end of their business, how they outsource manufacturing and order fulfillment, how they built such an engaged community around their business, a deep dive on their marketing tactics, and Alex's new project called Subscription Hacks. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Alex Brown. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I want to start this off with the first question that I've been asking all of my guests here on the show. So, Alex, what book are you reading right now, or what's been your favorite recently?
Actually, my favorite recently, and I'm almost finished, is Never Lose a Customer Again by Joey Coleman. Just all about customer experience and membership experience, and really changed a lot of my viewpoints on business. And it's just phenomenal all around. I recommend anybody that has a business or is involved in any sort of customer experience touch point to get into that book. Super good.
I like the sound of that, and I'm a little afraid because that book's not on my radar, but it sounds like one that I should be reading right now.
Definitely.
Cool. Well, we're going to add that to the list. Alex, let's dive into this interview, man. And, you know, before we get into talking about the Beard Club, which is what most of our listeners here today will be most familiar with, I want to rewind the clock a little bit. So where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Toronto, well, just north of Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
All right. A nice and sunny winter destination, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not the biggest winter fan. So I moved down to Southern California about 4 years ago, and I've been enjoying the winters down there.
Yes, I like that. So Alex, up in Toronto area, can you remember back to sort of the very first business you started, or, you know, project, test, whatever you want to think of it as?
I guess it would have to be, my parents have some big apple trees and pear trees in their backyard. So I would sell apples and pears at the side of the road, as I guess like a hobby, but, I made a couple dollars here and there, I'm sure.
I like that. That's kind of like the hard old school sale.
Yeah, like lemonade stand style startup.
And what age were you when you were doing this?
Oh, probably like 8 or 9 years old.
Wow. That's awesome, man. I'm not sure what I was doing at 8 or 9, but I don't think it was that.
Well, it wasn't. That definitely wasn't every day. I wasn't a hustler back then. I just was like, hey, I would like to make some money for candy.
I'm still trying to make money for candy.
Yeah, me too.
So let's talk about grown up businesses then. When do you feel like was your first project that really started to make kind of a meaningful amount of money or some other metric even that's important to you?
Well, I actually grew up in a pretty entrepreneurial family. My dad had a construction company. So not long after I was selling apples, I was kind of begging him to go to work. So I started working summers with him pretty early. And then in high school, started my own contracting company and was kind of subcontracting for him and getting out and basically making money to try and put myself through school because I thought that was the thing that everyone was doing. So I figured I would do that. But I got started in business, I guess you might say, pretty early and making pretty decent money at a young age. But it was in the trades and it wasn't something I was overly passionate about. It was nice to have a means of making money way more than minimum wage, but I knew it wouldn't last forever and just wasn't for me in general. And I wanted to go to school and get a wicked job and thought when I graduated, I could just kind of walk into the corporate world and get paid exorbitant amounts of money. But I actually graduated college at the height of the last recession in 2009. So that just wasn't the case for myself or my peers.
Yeah. And I actually want to talk about that working in construction a little bit because this kind of rings a familiar bell for me too. My dad had a concrete construction company. And so this was always my summer job and working with him doing that kind of manual labor. And I remember at the time, you know, when I was in high school, middle school, doing this kind of manual backbreaking work, it made very clear to me that I wanted to go to college and very similar feelings, you know, get out of college, get some sort of cool corporate job. And then, you know, I think we're the same age, graduated during the recession.
Yeah, that was sort of the plan that I'd bought into and it didn't quite match up. I didn't have the skills that employers were looking for and I couldn't seem to get jobs to get those skills. And I kind of figured that, I guess, just volunteering and doing work with whoever I could in the fields that I was interested in would be a way to bridge the gap. So that's kind of how I wedged myself into the startup space. I was working with Startup Canada and volunteering with NGOs and just trying to get out there and to network. And I was like, man, I thought I had a great resume. I've owned my own business. You know, I've made decent money and now I can't seem to get myself a job, you know, working as a receptionist at a gym because there's 50 other people applying for it. So it was, yeah, it was a tough time, but like, I'm grateful for that. And I'm sure you are too, because it kind of made you step back and think, okay, well, like this isn't going to go as planned. Let's make another plan and just kind of go for it and figure out how to make this work.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, this brings you to your first business. Which one would you define as being your first?
I spent some time working for other startups. One was in the pharmaceutical industry. We did some business development work and contract manufacturing work and helping companies enter new markets, which is like way over my head and still is. And it was a great experience though. I got to work with, you know, senior vice presidents and CEOs of these global companies and boosted my confidence a lot. And I just wasn't happy in that industry. And right around that time, I got introduced to my business partner, Chris. And he was just this kind of crazy all over the place kind of guy and wanted to start all these different businesses. And at the time, he had a wearables company called Vibe that he had just crowdfunded. And we got introduced through a mutual friend. And he was looking for kind of a jack of all trades like myself who was willing to kind of fill in whatever gaps needed to be filled. And so that's what I did. I moved down and we started working on this company, which actually ended up not doing too well. We were competing with the likes of, you know, Fitbit and some of the other massive companies out there that were doing similar things. So the timing wasn't right, but we closed the loop and shipped all of those units out. We had another company that was a portable golf hitting mat for like a range mat. And that did pretty well. I went into lots of big box retailers. We got retail distribution, which was a whole new ball game for me as well, securing that. But good experience. It was just a capital intensive product. But from there, we like started an agency because we're like, crap, we're not making any money doing this. All of our money gets tied up into products. But we knew how to like launch things and make things look good and shoot great videos and started to recruit some people to create an agency, which paid the bills for the most part. This is kind of a long form answer to your question, but I promise you it's going somewhere. So we were attracting more people to this kind of model of like, let's build some really cool businesses, launch the agency. We helped a couple people do product launches and crowdfunding campaigns. still pretty tough. We were like Airbnb-ing our rooms and sleeping in the backyard at many different points to kind of make ends meet and pay for groceries and whatnot. And then we launched our own product called Coolbox. And that was actually a really successful campaign. It did $500,000 in Indiegogo. And it led to my business partner, Chris, being on Shark Tank for it, pitching the sharks there. So that was like our first real, you know, escalation into a startup that started to really gain a lot of traction and got press. And it was really kind of built on the back of all the other experiences that didn't really do so well and didn't fly as planned, but gave us, you know, a much better network and a much better understanding of how to create and launch a product. And that, I guess, would be the first major one that kind of clicked for us. And it took a couple of years. We kind of fell into the fundraising trap and had to raise more money because it was a super capital intensive product. But we eventually found a partner and were able to license the product out, and they're commercializing it now, hopefully to become something really great and a household name. But that was kind of the escalation to that. And from there, that was when we decided to launch Beard Club. And it just actually happened really nice and naturally. At that time, we had six of us living in a house, all guys growing their beards. You know, it was this way of being like all natural and free. And, you know, we were getting into healthy, organic living and growing our beards because we wanted to do business our way, and saw what Dollar Shave Club was obviously doing. We knew we had all these great like branding and video capacity. And yeah, we just like started using products. We're like, oh, we got these beards. What do we do with them? Started using products. And everything that was out there was really pricey, you know, $20 for an ounce of beard oil. And kind of backtracked again to the contract manufacturing experience and a startup where I never thought I'd ever use that again. Found some manufacturers, worked with some fulfillment companies, and were able to kind of put the business together in the background and click go and launch. And from there, it took off like and just went absolutely viral. And that's when, you know, they always say, was it like a wise man once said, mo money, mo problems?
I like that this began as kind of a solution to your guys' own problem, right? Like you're looking at the market and you're like, holy shit, there's nothing but super premium expensive products out there, but more people want to grow a beard than just, you know, people who can afford to spend tons and tons and tons on products. So can you like drill in first before we keep going? Can you drill into a little bit more about the early customer development here? Because you know, a lot of our listeners here today are still in the validation phase for their idea. And I think this is a part where so many people are, you know, either trying to make leaps and bounds, run before walking, or even, you know, before truly understanding their customer. So can you tell us a little bit about sort of in the early days, like what you guys were doing to make sure that this is something people would want to pay for?
Yeah, I mean, we basically, like, it was a combination of just nailing the branding and the offering, and people got it when we launched. We were able to build a pre-launch list pretty easily because we started running ads and people were like, oh yeah, we get it. It's going to be beard products. But we really just took a look.
Ads?
Exactly, yeah. And we just took a look at the kind of products that were out there already. And this was, I guess, 3 years ago or so, 3.5 years ago when we first started it. So, you know, beard care companies were popping up left, right, and center. And we just saw everybody walking around with beards and they were just becoming bigger and bigger, and just kind of realized that we were at the cusp of this really cool time in male grooming in general, where it's now okay for a man to take care of himself. And that doesn't mean he's one thing or another. It just means he's taking care of himself. So we took a look at what was on the market and then just were like, hey, well, you know, how do we find a way to match that quality and then offer out at a price that's like, you know, half or a third or a quarter of what's out there, and get to people with some funny marketing and try and, you know, make this thing spread. And for us, you know, it was an easier position than a lot of people because we had something that was very sticky, you know, and we tapped into this like underlying thing of guys that, you know, grow beards and they're like kind of give each other a nod, sort of like the motorcycle wave. So we were able to tap into that underlying current. And also, you know, there was no real category king in that industry. We don't have anything that's overly proprietary other than our formulas, but, you know, somebody that's really good could go and duplicate it if they really wanted to. It was really the branding that set that apart. And I think that, you know, a number of people are sort of in that similar space where they're like, you know, they're competing against other people And there's like lots of other alternatives on the market, and they're just figuring out the best way to differentiate it. I think it's because for us and for a lot of successful companies, it's because you can connect with what you're actually selling. And for us, it was that belonging and, you know, being yourself and growing into yourself and being natural and being free and taking care of yourself. And connecting with that and putting that into our marketing and messaging allowed us to differentiate. And we had the leg up, like I said, of being in a very new industry. So we weren't necessarily competing against other people. We were trying to draw attention for what the products were itself. And that's still our biggest challenge. I'm actually really good friends with our two biggest competitors. And, you know, all of us are kind of like, well, how do we just grow this beard care industry in general? And how do we raise awareness for somebody that has a smaller beard to try products where they might see an advertisement and be like, well, I don't have a giant 2-foot beard. That's not for me, you know? I know that was another really long-winded answer, but I think I touched it.
No, well, I really want to emphasize for everyone listening today, seriously, go watch a couple of the videos on the Beard Club's YouTube channel, and you'll really sort of make this connection for what Alex is talking about. So, you know, these videos are so well produced. They like really drive to the core of what, you know, beard culture really is. And it's just so very clear to me in watching the videos that you guys really built a community around this, and the brand is what people attracted people to the business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's that, I was saying it's tapping into what people were really buying and getting a good understanding of. And it, even like as the years progressed in our business, we've lost touch with that at certain points. And every time we reconnect with, you know, how do we deliver people what they're actually wanting to buy, it becomes a bigger and bigger win for us. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of market research at all. It's getting out there, validating things, selling a few products, and just kind of tweaking and figuring out the messaging. And typically, you can figure out what that's going to be for your demographic, for your product, intuitively. And it doesn't require a lot of deep diving and customer surveying and all that sort of crap.
Do you remember the first paying customer you got at the Beard Club from someone who you didn't personally know?
I don't remember the first one because we had a list of about, I think it was only like 5,000 or 6,000 people. So we kind of hit them first with a video, and it dropped when the website went live. And, you know, we just started getting sales right away.
Did you guys do some sort of Kickstarter or Indiegogo with the product, or was it basically just website, you know, your YouTube video, and then things took off sort of organically from there?
Yeah, it was that formula. We were thinking about doing an Indiegogo campaign for it, but it didn't require a ton of investment for us to get started because we had a lot of the capabilities. It was really just the products. But as soon as we started to go viral in those first couple weeks, we quickly ran into a cash crunch where we're like, oh crap, we have a 5-week lead time, and, you know, product A is 3 weeks from going out of stock. We need to call the manufacturer and tell them to stop everything they're doing and help us out. So, you know, initially it wasn't too much of an issue to that.
This sounds like the classic best problem to have kind of scenario.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I'm like grateful for all those problems. We learned a lot of lessons the hard way, but, you know, none of them ever broke the back of the company. They might have caused a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of issues. We had to switch fulfillment partners within the first 3 months. We had to switch manufacturers. Our website was continually like kind of going down and breaking. At this time too, there wasn't the kind of like out of the box solutions have come so far, like, you know, your Shopify and your WooCommerce, WordPress, and recurring billing 3.5 years ago was pretty much a custom development option. No matter what you do, especially if you have 9 different SKUs. And as soon as you have 20,000 people choosing 9, and we went from 9 to like 15 in the first couple of months too, which was a great thing to do, introduce a bunch of products. You know, you have all these very complicated legacy data sets and a website that's not built to scale on that, and then add on things like a referral program to all these accounts. It started to get pretty messy and pretty choppy, and it took us years to sort out those initial web development woes. But again, great problem to have, and it's something that, you know, if we were to launch right now, we could very easily accomplish what we needed to for the launch with something like WordPress, WooCommerce, and, you know, Shopify, and how far they've come. So to anyone listening that's thinking of doing recurring, like, it's so much easier now, and starting simple always beats like trying to go custom and complicated right out of the gates.
So what did the logistics behind the scenes of the business look like? Were you guys, you know, accepting shipments of your products and then turning around, repackaging and sending to people? Or did you sort of outsource the fulfillment? Did you, you know, you said you had a contract manufacturer who was making the actual product. So that's pretty straightforward. Were they also the ones shipping it, or did they send to a fulfillment facility? What did that look like?
No, so we did contract fulfillment as well. Because we just thought it was going to be a nightmare and we didn't have as many hands on deck as we needed to do that. So we started with kind of like a mom and pop shop that was referred to us by a friend. They actually didn't have the right warehouse management software that would connect to our website. So we were passing them, you know, sometimes there's 1,000 orders at the end of the day every day, and they had to go through an Excel sheet and try and pack them, and it just became a disaster. So we finally linked up with a, you know, more legitimate 3PL that could handle what we needed. But it's kind of like Uber owns no cars, Beard Club actually makes no beard product and ships no beard product.
Wow. That's a cool position to be in, though. You guys are essentially kind of a middleman sitting in between a lot of different parties, and your value add is often sort of just like the brand, the community, and you know, you're doing customer service too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like there may come a point where it would want to be brought in-house, and there could be a savings and like definitely a membership experience that could be gained from that. But with the volume that we were doing, it just didn't make sense for us. We just thought, let's leave this to the professionals and give up a tiny bit of margin in order to focus on what we know how to do, which is, you know, brand and sell product and create an experience for people.
So with the Beard Club, how much revenue are you guys generating per year? Or, you know, if you want to share instead, like a ballpark customer number, whichever you feel comfortable with.
I actually don't have the updated numbers on me, but I could share that with you after if you want in a post, or if you wanted to post this.
Yeah, we can add it into the show notes afterwards for sure.
But I mean, there's been various times where we've had to scale back our acquisition to figure out different problems, but we've consistently been doing over $1 million a month in revenue for over 2 years now.
Wow, that's a really impressive milestone.
It's not too bad. Yeah, especially for some of the adversity we faced with our website and just being in a niche industry, really selling products that have, you know, a pretty low value. I shouldn't say value; they have a low cost. So it's a lot easier if you're selling $80 beard vitamins like some of our competitors do, to actually have, like, you know, a much higher customer lifetime value or be able to afford to spend more on acquiring a customer, so you can get your top line revenue a lot higher. So we've worked around a lot of those different things and just recently been focusing a lot on profitability and how to make our operations more efficient and our systems more efficient so that, you know, we can continue to scale up. And we've taken in 2 small chunks of cash, mainly for, inventory financing and a little bit for marketing and restructuring. But, for the most part, it's been cash funded business, and we've been trying to be smart with our money so that we can grow.
I love that. So Alex, I want to shift gears a little bit on you now. And one thing that we touched on a little bit earlier was, you know, your YouTube videos, your marketing video strategy, like how well you guys have done with that. And to give everyone listening today kind of an idea of the success that you guys have had with your videos, on your channel, there's over 50 videos. Most tend to get between 5,000 and 10,000 views. Some have hundreds of thousands, and, you know, one has a couple million. So maybe drilling into a couple of the most popular, or your strategy in general, how do you guys come up with the ideas for these? But then, you know, even more importantly, how do you actually execute on these ideas with such solid production value too?
For sure. I mean, just to note too, on Facebook, we actually have over 200 million video views combined, because it's just so much easier to share on Facebook. We actually neglected our YouTube channel until recently, when we realized, hey, this is the second biggest search engine in the world. What are we doing? Let's focus on YouTube more. But our strategy was always, and like I said, from the beginning of this, we had an agency where we were helping people do creative work. And from the get-go, we've made it a priority to find creative, really talented creative people and bring them on board as partners in the business and give them equity and help, you know, build this business together more or less. So Chris is actually like behind a lot of the videos and is an incredibly talented scripter, idea guy. And we have I think it's like four other full-time people that are on the creative team. So that's like the heart and soul of our marketing and our customer acquisition is great content. So for us, it was a matter of getting those people on board. I know it's definitely tough when you're starting out. This is a question I get all the time. It's like, well, I can't afford to hire a cameraman or video editor. Right. And that certainly might be true. There are lots of opportunities to find creative people that like working on commercials that would work for Sweat Equity. And you just have to be really good at, you know, pitching your vision to these people and having them get excited about it. And there's plenty of people at local universities that are looking for work. And there's also like this obsession with like, how do we get a viral video that gets seen by 20 million people? And, you know, we've had videos that have millions of views, but don't produce a lot of sales. So you can shoot videos for, you know, $1,000 or $2,000. And we've done it, you know, kind of guerrilla style. When you find the right creative people to do something that's low budget, that's actually a scalable acquisition tool and not just like a, hey, let's try and go viral. It's like, hey, this is going to explain our product. It's going to build like this connection with our potential customers. It's going to educate them a little bit. So, you know, there's certainly elements to a bit of a formula that you want to include. But really it's just a matter of finding the right people and not overcomplicating it and think that you have to have, you know, a beard club style commercial. You certainly don't. We've had, like I said, very low budget commercials that were very quickly done that have performed extremely well.
And I think, you know, you were anticipating my next question here. Of all your viral videos, you know, which ones have had an impact on sales, if that's something that you've been able to sort of identify?
Yeah, sometimes it's very difficult to attribute. But like when we're running landing pages and specific promotions, like a really great one was when we did about a year and a half ago when we launched our growth products. So they're just natural products that help hair grow thicker and fuller and stronger, and women can use them. So we have vitamins, we have like a cream, we have growth oil. So it was a very clear call to action. Like, hey, this will help you grow better hair. It doesn't make you sprout follicles, but we did like a spoof of a pharmaceutical commercial. So it's like, you know, those commercials with a million different side effects at the end. We had one where all the side effects were amazing and hilarious, like free drinks at bars, more attention from women. Like, it's a really funny commercial. It did really well. Like, it got shared a lot because people are like, yeah, screw those commercials. But this one was, it was super funny. It did really well. And it was a great acquisition tool as well, because it, you know, it communicated the benefits of the product, but in a really funny way. So it was something that people would share and just be like, oh man, like I got to give this a try. This seems really cool. And it kind of got both at once. And those have been like our best videos for brand awareness and for acquisition. We just try and make people laugh and try and make people have a good time and get them to share the video, which allows us to, like, the more engagement a video has on Facebook, the more spend we can put behind it and reach more people. So anything that allows us to brighten people's day a little bit, but also kind of hammers the point home about what we're all about and what we have to offer and what someone can gain from buying the products to be a hero in their own story, the better.
Yeah, it sounds like a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, everyone likes to laugh.
So Alex, you're now working on a new project as well called Subscription Hacks. Can you tell everyone listening here today a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. This is about like 4 or 5 months ago. I started to get a little restless, and I'm sure like there's entrepreneurs out there listening that can relate, and maybe even you as well, when start to get a little restless and think like, oh, like, you know, what do I want to do next? And I wasn't really giving enough to Beard Club. I wasn't really getting enough from Beard Club. And I had started to kind of help and advise other companies on the side. I was part of a lot of mastermind groups. I was like, I really like this. So like, you know, I didn't realize the value I had because I'd just been in the trenches for years and years doing all this stuff and figuring it out, that when I went to a new company and just shared with them stuff that I knew was common knowledge because I made some really serious mistakes to get it burned into my brain, had a really big positive impact and a really, like, you know, a really great boost to the business. And I got just such a rush from doing that. And so it kind of started as a personal branding project. I was like, you know, maybe I should do a personal branding thing. And I'd been speaking at conferences and at mastermind events and stuff like that. And so I kind of just started writing again, like I did when I was out of college, and blogging, and it kind of developed more. And I was, you know, had some friends that had done info products in the internet marketing space, and you know, online courses that teach people. It's like, maybe I could just put all this into a course and teach people how to build a better e-commerce business and how to scale up from where they are. And I guess continue to build it more and more. And it evolved into what's now going to be mostly an accelerator kind of model. So I have this awesome course that I've built out. And that's kind of the backbone, the knowledge base, if you will. And there were three things that really helped me. I found that were, you know, this kind of knowledge and the understanding, which a lot of it I earned the hard way. There's kind of a network of like-minded people that can keep you encouraged, that you can learn from. And then there's access to kind of the best like service providers and the people that I met by going to $5,000 mastermind events and all these exclusive sort of networking jams. So I basically was like, well, why don't I just kind of formulate this to be around that model and deliver those three things. So have, you know, the networking aspect where people can connect with one another and help each other out, direct access to myself and a bunch of other mentors who are experts in specific areas like Facebook marketing or fulfillment or product development. And then just a network of referrals to the best service providers you can get, whether you need to fix a broken website or, you know, switch your fulfillment to a bi-coastal distribution model. I've built up all that knowledge and experience and network, and it's just a lot of fun sharing it and seeing the impact that that can have. And so that's kind of my full-time gig now.
I love it. And I like that this is a very high touch project for you as well. You know, you mentioned accelerator model, right? So it's not just that you're, you know, selling someone a course for $99 and then, hey, hi, see you later. You're very invested in the people that join.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, I think it's like 5 or 10% of people will complete an online course. And I just didn't like that. And I think that having more, it's obviously not as scalable, but it's totally cool for me to just, you know, work with less companies and have a greater impact and have a greater potential with all of them than to just try and do, you know, this affiliate style launch where you have, you know, 10 people mail out to their entrepreneur list and you try and make a quick $1 million and then disappear once you sort of help everyone. I mean, the information in there would help a lot of people and change a lot of businesses, but it's really the application. It's like the network. It's the direct access when you're having an issue and keeping people accountable. And, you know, I'm still feeling out the exact way that this model should and will work. And that's kind of the beauty of it. I'm on a whole new journey again. I was like, you know, maybe I should do this and it'll feel good to help people do things that I've already done. Meanwhile, what I'm doing right now, I've never done, and I've never built out a community like this. So I'm learning all sorts of new lessons. And yeah, it's super frustrating at times, but it's also like super rewarding to be able to help people. So just embracing the journey and seeing the best way, the best formula to help out as many companies and, you know, not get caught up in this consulting model of like, you know, trading your time for money. I'd rather trade value for, you know, this membership group and see where that leads and see the best way to kind of tweak it and make sure it's working. And that's the only way I can help a lot of people instead of just, you know, I consult for this company this week and this company this week. I kind of didn't want to go down that route. I think it's certainly interesting for a lot of people, but I'm just a born like networker and connector and helper. So the more I can do that, I think the more opportunities are going to come my way anyways.
I love it. Well, we'll be watching and we're expecting big things.
No pressure.
No pressure. So Alex, I want to ask you a couple of my frequently asked questions now as we sort of come to the end of this interview. So first up, what's your number one piece of advice to someone who wants to start a subscription business today?
That's a great question. I think getting really clear on, you know, a value proposition is great. Specifically for subscription business, because we did Dollar Beard Club, people are like, hey, Alex, I want to start Dollar Blank Club. And I'm like, okay, cool. And they're like, yeah, it's like you save $1 a month on toilet paper and it gets delivered directly to your door every month. And, you know, there's like, there's a lot of people trying to stretch out, you know, this value in monthly delivery. Like getting something every month delivered to your door isn't that valuable. People don't care that much. It's not going to change the world. It's like to start a new subscription company that will really scale and take off, I think you need to be a lot more creative than that and hone in on that value proposition and what you're bringing to the table that, you know, can't really be found elsewhere, or in a way that really connects, like we said earlier, with what they're actually looking to buy and that feeling that they're actually looking to get. if you can connect people with that feeling and it's something that's already available, you can find some success doing that too. But and getting clear on those two things and focusing the business on that instead of, you know, the value being it's delivered every month and it's a little bit cheaper, that's a far more scalable, sustainable business.
I love that. Do you have any particular strategies, tactics, ideas that you've tested that come to mind that ended up being a failure?
How much time you got? I mean, we've tested a lot of things. Like one thing that stuck out, I guess we were talking about videos, really is authenticity. We made a video, I guess it was about a year into Beard Club, just under a year into Beard Club. And we put a bunch of exotic animals into it, and we spent a bunch of money, more money than we'd ever spent on a video before. And we just thought it was going to go viral. And we put all this attention into getting something to go viral. And it was really inauthentic. It was completely disconnected from making people a hero in their own story, disconnected from, you know, what people are buying and what they're going to get from it. It was just like us trying to make this awesome video. And we did, and it got lots of views and it was great. But it didn't build a lot of brand equity. It just kind of made us look like douchebags. And
interesting.
I think it's, I mean, like, I guess the moral of the story is authenticity, and people can really tell when you're being authentic and raw and being yourself. And so that was, you know, a hard learned lesson. And, you know, when you start to see a little bit of success, to continue to remain humble, but just to never lose connection with your customer and what you're trying to do for them. And don't make it about yourself.
All right, Alex. Well, this is going to be my last question for you. What's the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing your business? So this could be in the form of time, money, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
Wow, that's a really good question. I would say like the best ongoing investment for sure has been in my health. I've gotten into, you know, like naturopathic health and medicine and wellness and just kind of preventative medicine. And I find the more that I take care of myself, the better the food that I put in my body, or, you know, different modalities of treatments I get, whether it's for, you know, my back or whatever it might be, doing a cleanse. Like the more I invest in my health, the more productive I am, the more happy I am, the more I'm able to give, and the more I'm able to receive, really. So just a much more well-rounded person in business and in life. And I really neglected my health in my early 20s, and it wasn't bad, but partying a lot, smoking, drinking, eating crappy foods, which I thought were healthy, but really weren't. A lot of processed stuff. And as soon as I started to make that shift, a shift happened across my whole life, and in my business life as well, my career. So that's probably the best ongoing investment I've made, but it happens every day.
I love it. Great parting advice. Well, Alex, can you tell everyone listening where they can go to learn more about you, subscription hacks, Beard Club, and everything else that you're up to?
Yeah, Beard Club is just thebeardclub.com. My personal website's thealexbrown.com. I almost forgot there. And then subscription hacks is just subscriptionhacks.com. All super straightforward.
Awesome. All right, Alex. Well, thank you again for joining us.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.